Welcome back to the Hemingway List. It's the podcast of the world. Hey, I don't know if I told you guys this, but yesterday, or maybe I did, yesterday I finished my novel. I finished the novel I've been working on for more than 5 years. So, congratulations to me. A pat on the back. It was a surreal feeling. It's my third novel, so I know the feeling of finishing a novel after years of excuse me, I got the hiccups. After years of work. But it was just a funny feeling. Like, people were asking me all day, like, well, how am I feeling? That kind of thing. And it was kind of like, I just felt shaky and like jittery, even a little anxious. You'd think there would be a huge sense of relief and like you can like a load off your mind sort of thing, and something you've been carrying for 5 years, a project finally wrapping it up or reaching the end would come with some kind of relief. But really, no, it was a funny feeling. It was a funny day. I felt good, don't get me wrong, but anyway. So, 5 years in the making. It's only the first draft, but that's really the hardest part, is getting that first draft done. And I write pretty clean drafts. So, I think that's part of the reason it takes me so long to write a draft, is because once I've done a first draft, I've done 98% of the finished book. Like, the rest is just kind of tinkering. So, but that tinkering takes a long time. You know, it's many proofreads, it's many beta reads and test reads and edits, but yeah, the work's done. I mean, it's halfway done, but the hardest bit's done. What am I saying? Anyway, it's finished and I feel good. personal fable. Hopefully it'll come out this year. That'll be a bit of a rush. Don't really know what I'll do with it. I've always self-published my books and done pretty well doing that. But I've done well enough doing that that you could justify, publishing them traditionally. And I've also kind of built up a bit of a name in the writing scene in, you know, around Melbourne and around schools and that kind of thing. So, I don't know. I just feel like, my plan was to self-publish it, but one of my author buddies said I was selling myself short not to at least try sending it to a publisher. So I'm considering whether I should do that or not. Probably won't, though. I'll probably just do it myself, as I usually do. It's just so much quicker. You know, if I do it myself, I can get it out this year or early next year. Or if I go through a publisher, you're just adding a long time to the process. Anyway, we're looking at, what are we talking about? Chapter 8 of Anna Karenina, and then we'll be reading chapter 9. Wow, I've just seen chapter 10. Chapter 10, tomorrow's chapter, is the shortest chapter I've done since starting this project, including War and Peace. It's maybe just under half a page. Or maybe it's just over half a page. That is a short chapter. I'm kind of excited to see what a half a page chapter is like, but that's for tomorrow, I suppose. Anyway, chapter 8, predictions. How will this confrontation go down? And the questions of her conscience are not his concern, but belong to religion. What are your thoughts on that? I was wondering about like the modern, like I agree with that. even though I'm not really a religious person, but I know what he means. Like at that time and place, like that was the function of religion, was to sort out those questions of morals, of moral integrity. Religion was their compass for that kind of thing. And I was kind of thinking, with a question of the conscience in that day and age, you would say, well, what are the guidelines for this based on our religion? And that would be how you'd kind of sort right from wrong in a question of morals. And I think that's a pretty good method. But I was wondering about like the modern day kind of equivalent of that. What would you say these days along the same lines. Swim said the mama fishy said, "Wow, this is an amazing and pivotal chapter. Karenin is absolutely going to botch his talk with Anna. After this chapter, any sympathy for Karenin has nosedived for me. Karenin had an opportunity to grow and change based on his interior monologue with himself, but in the end, nope, he didn't." And then you've put in some quotes from the chapter. I won't read back over those because they're just lines from the chapter. But I see what you mean. He grappled with the idea of your jealousy being... Yeah, I don't know. I think I might have had a bit more sympathy for him because... like that jealous feeling when it's not justified, but it's warranted, I suppose. Like there's evidence for him that she's committing this adultery or going to, or she's interested. And he had quite a mature outlook on that up until he decided to confront her. But I still would say it's a bad move to confront her. I would agree with that. But he didn't just fly into a jealous rage. He was pretty particular about walking in circles, running it around in his head. And I think in the end, the temptation to confront her got too great. I think it really depends on how he does this talk. But yet, like, I was a bit disappointed in the conclusion that he eventually came to. But I still feel for the guy. Like, it's not an easy situation to navigate. Techrific said, "I think he's an institutional man through and through. Any glimpse into the real messy life that goes on frightens and confuses him. He also seems highly rational, which means he is suppressing a lot of emotion. I feel for him on a human level, but I deeply understand what Anna must have dealt with and why he's so tempted away from his bone dry. Why she is so tempted away from this bone dry man. He isn't a caricature, though, which is why I don't want to judge him too harshly, because plenty of people have trouble growing. Let us hope his growing is still ahead of him." Mango Mondo said, "And yet he is a diplomat, right? He should have a fundamental understanding and deep insight into human behavior, and yet when he briefly considers what Anna thinks and feels, basically an attempt at empathy, he recoils. This chapter confused me in the best possible way. I was on the one hand deeply sympathetic to Anna's husband, and he does seem to love Anna, but he seems wholly incapable of expressing that love. He thinks jealousy is a sign of distrust. He's right, but it's also an expression of love and vulnerability, which he cannot allow." I agree, says Techrific. "He kind of sucks at real life, to put it bluntly. It's not a crime, but he's his own worst enemy. He's a diplomat." Oh, hiccups. Excuse me. This probably sounds really gross in the microphone. "Yes, he's a diplomat, but only in the sense of a glorified lawyer with a lawyer's mind. A lawyer of accords, detentes, cordiales, trade agreements, not really the kind of mind to understand the I and thou relationship of love." I'm just going back to this bit about his attempt at empathy and failing. I just feel like, he's got emotions, right? And he's very logical, he's very pragmatic and diplomatic. But he's also got emotions, and emotions overrule those kinds of things. He keeps a pretty level head, but... I see him failing here a little bit, but to keep his composure, but it's also kind of understandable. It's understandable that he would make a mistake in these situations, in these circumstances. I Am Norwegian says, "I like Alexei's approach to jealousy, that he avoids it because it implies his wife is not trustworthy. Him only noticing that something was off with Anna and Vronsky by observing everyone else in the room was funny. A senior statesman, and he's that naive. But then we discover that it's not naivety at all. Alexei has carefully constructed a facade that he could hide behind as to avoid the terrifying possibilities and chaos of the real world. even trying to be as empathetic as possible towards Anna scares him. Even with all of this, I keep liking Alexei more and more, even as he's showcasing why people hate bureaucrats. It seems both I and Tekrific were half right. I'm really tempted to just read on. The question of a conscience are not his concern, but belong to religion. He's excusing himself from having to deal with the complicated inner life of his wife by saying, well, that's between her and God. It's not my place to judge, so I don't even have to think about it. Oh, yeah, you think it's like that. Oh, wow, okay. No, I don't think he was trying to, like, come up with a reason why he shouldn't think about it. I was thinking more he was trying to afford her own privacy, you know, her own space to be who she is and make her own decisions without him trying to control what she might do. If she is going to, you know, follow this thing through with Vronsky or pursue it, that's up to her own moral guidance. If he tries to interfere with that, he's really only being controlling, right? And so he's sort of saying, well, I'll just have to trust that she'll use her own moral compass, which is, as the times dictated, religion. Swim said the mum of Fishy said, I don't recommend reading on. I did that with War and Peace, and it really messes up the reading along with everyone else. I think our esteemed senior statesman is copping out so he doesn't have to deal with real life rather than his comfortable reflection of life. Tolstoy doesn't judge, but I do. I think this is exactly it, said Tekrific. I couldn't put it as succinctly and eloquently as you did justice, but this is what I was trying to say in my ramblings. He's copping out so he doesn't have to deal with real life rather than his comfortable reflection of life. All right. I'm going to move on to the next chapter here. This is chapter 9. Anna walked in with bowed head, playing with the tassels of her hood. Her face shone with a vivid glow, but it was not a joyous glow. It resembled the terrible glow of a conflagration on a dark night. On seeing her husband, she lifted her head and, as if awakening from sleep, smiled. You're not in bed. What a wonder, she said, throwing off her hood. And without pausing, she went on to her dressing room. Alexis Alexandrovich, it's high time, she added from beyond the door. Anna, I must have a talk with you. With me, she said with surprise, coming back from the other room and looking at him. What is it? What about? She asked, seating herself. Well, let us have a talk, if it is so important, but it would be better to go to bed. Anna said what came into her head, and hearing her own words was astonished at her capacity for deception. How simple and natural her words sounded, and how really it seemed as if she were merely sleepy. She felt herself clothed in an impenetrable armor of lies, and that some unseen power was helping and supporting her. Anna, I must warn you, said he. Warn me? She asked. What about? She looked so naturally and gaily at him that one who did not know her, as her husband did, could not have noticed anything strange in the intonation or the meaning of her words. But for him, who knew her, knew that when he went to bed 5 minutes late, she noticed it and asked the reason. Knew that she had always immediately told him all her joys, pleasures, and sorrows. For him, her reluctance to notice his state of mind or to say a word about herself meant much. He saw the depths of her soul, till now always open, were closed to him. More than that, he knew from her tone that she was not ashamed of this, but seemed to be saying frankly, yes, it is closed, and so it should be and will be in the future. He now felt like a man who, on coming home, finds his house locked against him. But perhaps the key can still be found, thought Karenin. I wish to warn you, he said in low tones, that you may, by discretion and carelessness, give the world occasion to talk about you. Your too animated conversation tonight with Count Vronsky, he pronounced the name firmly and with quiet deliberation, attracted attention. As he spoke, he looked at her laughing eyes, terrible to him now in their impenetrability, and felt the uselessness and idleness of his words. You are always like that, she replied, as if not understanding him at all, and intentionally taking notice only of his last words, One day you dislike my being dull, another day my being happy. I was not dull. Does that offend you? Karenin started and bent his hands to crack his fingers. Oh, please don't crack your fingers. I dislike it so, said Anna. Anna, is this you? Said he softly, making an effort and refraining from moving his hands. But whatever is the matter? She asked in a tone of comical surprise and sincerity. What do you want of me? Karenin paused and rubbed his forehead and eyes. He felt that instead of doing what he had meant to do and warning his wife that she was making a mistake in the eyes of the world, he was involuntarily getting excited about a matter which concerned her conscience and was struggling against some barrier of his imagination. This is what I intended to say, he continued coldly and calmly, and I ask you to listen to me. As you know, I consider jealousy an insulting and degrading feeling, and will never allow myself to be guided by it, but there are certain laws of propriety, which one cannot disregard with impunity. I did not notice it this evening, but judging by the impression created, all present noticed that you behaved and acted quite as was desirable. Really, I don't understand at all, said Anna, shrugging her shoulders. It is all the same to him, she said to herself, but society noticed and that disturbs him. You are not well, Alexis Alexandrovitch, she added, rose and was about to pass out of the room, but he moved forwards as if wishing to stop her. His face looked plainer and gloomier than she had ever yet seen it. Anna stopped and throwing back her head and bending it to one side, she began with her quick hands to take out her hairpins. Well, I'm listening. What next? She said quietly and mockingly. I'm even listening with interest, because I should like to understand what it is all about. As she spoke, she wondered at her quietly natural tone and at her correct choice of words. I have not the right to inquire into all of the details of your feelings, and in general I consider it useless and even harmful to do so, began Karenin. By digging into our souls, we often dig up what might better have remained there unnoticed. Your feelings concern your own conscience, but it is my duty to you, to myself and to God, to point out to you your duties. Our lives are bound together, not by men, but by God. This bond can only be broken by a crime, and that kind of crime brings its punishment. I don't understand anything, oh dear. And as ill luck will have it, I am dreadfully sleepy, she said, while with deft fingers she felt for the remaining pins in her hair. Anna, for God's sake, don't talk like that, he said mildly. Perhaps I am mistaken, but believe me that what I am saying I say equally for my own sake and for yours. I am your husband and I love you. For an instant her head had drooped and the mocking spark in her eyes had died away. But the word love aroused her again. Love, she thought, as if he can love. But if he had never heard people talk of love, he would never have wanted that word. He does not know what love is. Alexis Alexandrovitch, I really do understand, she replied. Explain what you consider. Allow me to finish. I love you. But I'm not talking of myself. The chief persons concerned are our son and yourself. I repeat, perhaps my words may seem quite superfluous to you. Perhaps they result from a mistake of mine. In that case, I ask your pardon, but if you feel that there are any grounds, however slight, I beg you to reflect, and if your heart prompts you to tell me. Karenin did not notice that he was saying something quite different from what he had prepared. I have nothing to say. Besides, she added rapidly and hardly repressing a smile, it really is bedtime. Karenin sighed and without saying anything more went into the bedroom. When she went there, he was already in bed. His lips were sternly compressed, and his eyes did not look at her. Anna got into her bed, and every moment expected that he would address her. She was afraid of what he would say, and yet wished to hear it. But he remained silent. She lay waiting and motionless for a long time, and then forgot him. She was thinking of another. She saw him, and felt her heart fill with excitement and guilty joy at the thought. Suddenly she heard an even, quiet, nasal sound like whistling. For a moment, the sound he emitted seemed to have startled Karenin, and he stopped. But after he had breathed twice, the whistling recommenced with fresh and calm regularity. It's late," she whispered to herself, and smiled. For a long time she lay still with wide open eyes, the brightness of which it seemed to her she could herself see in the darkness. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Confrontation didn't really go all that well for poor old Vronsky. Have your say about this over at the subreddit. Thanks for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.